Penguin Random House Audio presents The Perfect Kill, 21 Laws for Assassins, by Robert Baer. Read for you by Keith Sarabica. Prologue. I never gave assassination a lot of thought until the morning two button-down FBI agents flashed me their credentials, dryly read me my rights, then even more dryly informed me I was under investigation for the attempted murder of Saddam Hussein. It was of apparent indifference to them that I was a duly sworn federal agent, that Saddam at the time was this country's number one enemy, that I'd been sent to Iraq to get rid of Saddam. The way I looked at it, it was pretty much a blank check. Things didn't lighten up any when halfway into my interview, one of the FBI agents let it drop that the Department of Justice might consider further charging me with a capital crime. That one also went back to Iraq, when a guerrilla force serving under me overran a couple of army positions, leading to the death of who knows how many of Saddam's soldiers. I thought about asking the FBI agents to explain the difference between assassination and aiding a resistance movement organized to depose a sworn enemy. Aren't they both meant to end up in the same place, the death of the enemy? But I knew I wouldn't get an answer. I also knew my employer wasn't going to be much help either. Before I left for Iraq, I'd asked my boss at the CIA for a definition of assassination. He paused a beat and said, "It's a bullet with a man's name on it." "What did that mean?" I asked myself. It wasn't as if I hadn't been around political murder. The CIA had sent me to Beirut in the mid-80s to track the most notorious assassin of modern times. I stopped at pretty much nothing trying to put the man out of business, but only managed to get away with my own life. And then, years later, someone else took care of him, another bride who got away. The FBI's heart was never really in the Saddam investigation, and they dropped it. Life returned to normal, but I never did stop thinking about assassination. Two misses don't make me an expert, but I'm a firm believer that engagement is the easiest path to understanding. And there's this that's been on my mind for a long time. Dostoevsky said we can know everything we need to know about a society by taking a look inside its prisons. But it seems to me who and how we murder for political ends tells us a lot more. Introduction. Buttonwillow, California, 4th of July weekend, 2011. It's not even 11 a.m., and already it's more than 100 degrees. There's some pewter crap in the air draped over the Central Valley like a dirty sheet. With a lane of the I-5 closed for construction, traffic's moving at an infuriating crawl. To relieve the monotony, we pull off for coffee. While my wife and daughter order at Starbucks, I drive across the street to the Valero station. Waiting for a pump to free up, I check my cell phone to find a text message from a British journalist in Lebanon. "Congrats! You just featured on Al-Manar during Nasrallah's speech defending the indictments." I stare at my phone as if somehow the words are going to rearrange themselves so I don't figure into them. Getting mentioned in any context on Hezbollah's TV station is never a good thing. But featured on it can only spell some special doom. Until Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah had more American blood on its hands than anyone outside traditional war. In the 80s, Hezbollah blew up two of our embassies in Beirut, murdered the CIA chief there, and truck-bombed the Marine barracks near the airport, killing 241. They spread mayhem around the rest of the world, from Bangkok to Buenos Aires, from Paris to Berlin. As for Nasrallah, he's Hassan Nasrallah, the fierce black-robed cleric who heads Hezbollah. He's a man as steeped in blood as any of his underlings. The indictments are no mystery either. They refer to news leaks that the Special Tribunal for Lebanon is about to name four Hezbollah members in the assassination of Rafik Hariri, the billionaire and former Lebanese prime minister. His end came on Valentine's Day, 2005, when a suicide bomber rammed an explosives-filled van into his convoy as it traveled through central Beirut, incinerating Hariri and 21 others. The business tycoon was a darling of the White House and Riyadh's royal palaces, and his murder rattled a lot of powerful people. Since then, Hezbollah has tried everything to erase its fingerprints from Hariri's assassination, from murdering key investigators to putting forward a patsy to falsely claim responsibility. So forget what the journalist just texted me.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?